overall, if the figures, actuarial figures are good, it'll be about $3,000 in every taxpaying family's pocket.
The U.S. House passes its tax cut package. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, November 16th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a fatal shooting by police in East Anchorage.
Barclay pointed a weapon at the officers that were involved, and the officers fired on Barclay, killing him.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
ExxonMobil Alaska, whose goal is safe and responsible operations of the Point Thompson facility. ExxonMobil, energy lives here.
Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
The U.S. House today passed its tax cut package. Like all but 13 Republicans, Alaska Congressman Don Young voted for the bill.
No, it's good. There's so many people, you know, saying it's not so good, but overall, if the figures, actuarial figures, are good, it'll be about $3,000 in every taxpaying family's pocket that they didn't have before. That's how much the cut's going to be.
Democrats say the House bill gives an outsized tax cut to the wealthy. A fact sheet issued by the Democratic National Committee says 11% of middle-income Alaska households would face a tax increase of $600 on average. The figure comes from a report by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, a left-leaning think tank. The House bill does not include opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling. Young says the plan is to pass ANWR in the Senate version of the bill and then fight for it in the conference committee, where the two chambers negotiate their differences and write a final version.
I expect the House to concede to the Senate on the ANWR provisions and become a reality. Again, though, I want to warn people, don't go to the bank right away because it's a long ways betwixt and between.
The Senate hopes to pass its bill after Thanksgiving. Young says he expects the final bill to be signed into law in the spring. Legal challenges to legislation passed last week that revised criminal sentencing could focus on whether one provision is unconstitutional. There are different views on the law, as Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
If Governor Bill Walker signed Senate Bill 54, American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska lawyer Tara Rich expects defense attorneys to file lawsuits almost immediately. She says the ACLU will be joining them because it considers one part unconstitutional. That section says that people arrested for committing Class C felonies for the first time face the same range of sentences as those charged with more serious Class B felonies.
There's no rational basis for the legislature to completely fail to distinguish between these two separate levels of crimes, then it will be struck down as violating due process rights.
The ACLU and state prosecutors raised similar concerns about the provision with lawmakers last week. But State Criminal Division Director John Skidmore said Tuesday that judges may not strike down the law. In fact, Skidmore says he expects the courts will work out a solution.
The courts in Alaska will find a way to interpret the statute in a way that avoids any constitutional issues.
Skidmore says judges would likely do this using what are called benchmarks.
Instead of the legislature giving specific sentencing ranges, the courts step in and provide a sentencing range within what the legislature has already given them.
In the case of first-time Class C felonies, Senate Bill 54 says sentences should be between 0 and 2 years. That's the same range as for first-time Class B felons. Judges could set a benchmark at the low end of the range for the less serious C felonies. The House had added the C felony sentencing provision as an amendment. Skidmore raised concerns about the issue before the Senate decided to agree to the House version of the bill.
The Department of Law obviously prefers to avoid litigation like what we will encounter, which is why we had recommended that this issue be resolved by the legislature in conference committee.
But that didn't happen. If Walker signs the bill, Rich says the lawsuits will be filed quickly. That's because the lawyer for anyone charged with a first-time Class C felony would seek the plea bargain, and negotiating for that plea would depend on how judges interpret the law. Rich made a different prediction than Skidmore, that courts will invalidate the Class C felony provision and cause that portion of the law to revert to what it is under the controversial Senate Bill 91. First-time Class C felons face only suspended sentences under the law instead of automatic jail time.
As soon as a defense attorney receives a first-time C felony under SB 54, once SB 54 becomes law, if they believe it's unconstitutional and that a court would most likely rule that it should return to the original SB 91 sentencing scheme, that is how they would operate in negotiating the case.
Rich says the ACLU was disappointed with other changes the House made on the floor.
They're ratcheting up criminal penalties and packing the bill with amendment after amendment, like Kansas sardines.
ACLU concerns also include a provision that affects the length of sentences for people who commit Class A misdemeanors for the second time and for those who are charged with disorderly conduct. She pointed to evidence that the disorderly conduct sentencing would disproportionately affect Alaska Natives. Senate President Pete Kelly must sign Senate Bill 54 before it goes to Walker. The governor would then have 20 days, not including Sundays, to sign it into law. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Police officers in Anchorage killed a man late Wednesday night after he pointed a handgun at them, Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports.
The shooting happened after 11 p.m. in the parking lot of a Fred Meyer grocery store in the East Anchorage neighborhood of Muldoon. In a press conference the next morning, Police Chief Justin Dahl told reporters that officers were attempting to take 48-year-old Thomas Barclay into custody when he tried to flee. Dahl says officers surrounded Barclay's vehicle, pinning him in.
Barclay pointed a weapon at the officers that were involved, and the officers fired on Barclay, killing him.
Barclay was pronounced dead at the scene. Three officers discharged weapons. As per APD policy, they've been placed on administrative leave and won't be publicly identified until 72 hours after the event. No officers on the scene were injured. According to a police spokesperson, Barclay was wanted on several felony warrants, including assault, misconduct involving a weapon, reckless driving, and felony DUI. The department's recently formed investigative support unit had been attempting to locate Barclay for about a week. As police made contact, Barclay's significant other was also on hand.
She got out of the vehicle and was apprehended by police. She was taken in for questioning, but as of right now, she has not been charged.
Dahl says the woman was not injured during the incident. This is the third time this year APD officers have been involved in a shooting, though none of the others in 2017 were lethal. The number of officer-involved shootings spiked a few years ago in Anchorage, with five in 2012 and another five more the next year. Dahl says each incident prompts review by the department.
I think we have given officers additional tools to try to help reduce officer-involved shootings, and they've been trained in new tactics and so forth over the last few years. But that's sort of a normal ongoing process.
The Office of Special Prosecutions will review the case to determine whether the use of deadly force by officers was justified. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a robber makes off with a fistful of cash from a bingo night in Bethel.
I ran after him, and he's younger and faster than I. So all I saw was his form running down the street.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
Anchorage may not get a lot of sun in the winter, but solar energy is still increasing in popularity around the city. From the Anchorage Solar Building to the Alaska Aviation Museum's solar tracking array, establishments are doing their part to go green. Several UAA students recently had 9 solar panels installed on one of the university's buildings. Even though it's a small contribution to energy efficiency, they're hoping it will have a larger effect over time. Alaska Public Media's Samantha Davenport has more.
Alexandria McLaren talks about the new solar panels like she's describing a childhood dream come true. She's been intrigued with solar panels since she did her first ever science project on solar energy as a kindergartner.
I literally have chills about it. Like, I'm so excited.
McLaren is a member of the Green Fee Board, the campus organization that pushed to get the panels installed on the administration building. The Green Fee Board has funds to support projects proposed by students that demonstrate economic solutions to environmental problems. McLaren says that she brought the solar panel idea to a previous student government president.
Students want sustainable energy. We want to move in the right direction.
The power generated by the solar panels go directly to the building. They'll provide around 3-7% of the building's power in the summer. That may not sound like a lot, but the admin building is home to the office of the chancellor, student affairs, academic affairs, university advancement, administrative services, and a number of classrooms. Heather Jesse is an economics student who worked alongside McLaren to complete the project. She says the admin building wasn't the team's first choice.
We originally wanted it on Rasmussen because it was more visibility, for campus. We had them do a walkthrough. They told us that was not going to be optimal for generating the most solar, so we settled here, which turned out to be an even better place, I think.
Jesse is currently working on a monitoring and measuring system that will go online. Students will be able to see how much of the building's power is being generated by the panels and how many kilowatts have been saved. There are no other solar panels currently installed at UAA. ML&P significantly increased the price of electricity last summer. Jesse hopes the solar panels will help even out the extra cost.
As an economics student, I'm super stoked that we're going to be helping to lower the costs of tuition for students, that we're helping offset the increase in ML&P.
It costs around $1,000 per panel to have them installed and wired into the electric grid. McLaren and Jesse are optimistic that the Green Fee Board will eventually install more panels, but they are currently working on other sustainable projects. Jesse is in the process of drafting an initiative to install 5 more panels for the spring semester. In Anchorage, I'm Samantha Davenport.
Extreme weather has caused chaos recently in places like Puerto Rico and Texas. But to better understand how humans react to these types of events, one historian is looking at the distant past. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more on how an Alaska volcano disrupted a society halfway around the world.
Joseph Manning says if you want to study past climate events, ancient Egypt is a good place to start. The Egyptians kept detailed records. There was everyday bookkeeping on crops, land leases, letters, and legal documents, usually written on papyrus. And Manning says a lot of that has survived.
Well, ironically, because of the dryness of Egypt, but also the fondness for mummification, which is interesting. So a lot of documents get recycled as mummy wrappings or mummy stuffing, sacred animals and human.
You heard that right. Some of these old records were found in the body cavities of mummies. But when you look at the documents as a whole, Manning says a story starts to emerge, and it's one that includes Alaska. As a history professor at Yale University, Manning studies the Ptolemaic period. You probably know it as a time when Cleopatra reigned as queen. But to historians, it's a period marked by social unrest and revolts. That's been linked in part to changes in the Nile River. The river didn't flood for 2 to 3 years, which meant crops didn't get vital nutrients and irrigation.
People recall a time in the past when there was widespread famine, and they worry that that might happen again.
But he says an important part of the story was missing. What caused the Nile to stop flooding every year? So Manning looked for scientists to compare notes. He remembers a colleague showing him a newly published paper on volcanic eruptions.
And I told him the sort of dates I was interested in, and they kind of lined up in sort of a spooky way, I would say. And then we got to work.
Beyond the historical documents, like the mummy wrappings and measurements of the Nile, Manning teamed up with scientists to examine what he calls natural archives. That is, layers of ice thousands of years old. Below the surface of the ice is a record of major climatic change. Scientists can pull up core samples and test it for particulates that may have been deposited from a distant volcano. And Manning was able to use that data, comparing volcanic activity with the timeline.
So you can tell specific eruptions, you can tell approximately where the eruption is located, and you can tell the size of the eruption, which also matters.
What they found was volcanoes in Iceland, Alaska, and possibly Russia were erupting around the same time the Nile River was thrown out of whack. Manning says large volcanic eruptions can cause cooling and drought. And in the case of the Nile River, the eruption may have caused less rain to fall in Ethiopia, so the Nile didn't flood. That, in turn, set off a chain of tumultuous events that would have been impossible to comprehend.
Egyptians have no idea there's a volcano in Alaska.
Manning says scientists have posed the volcano theory before, but this kind of approach is a new way of understanding how history and climate are connected.
And that's for the first time, really, as an historian, you can see a dynamic society. It's like, you know, pulling a curtain back and actually seeing a society moving around, as opposed to a static picture of an ancient society.
And Manning thinks today, as we see weather shifts caused by warming and human activity, we can learn something from the past. The ancient Egyptians can help us understand how environmental change influences behavior and potentially leads to political unrest or war. He says there are some skeptics to this approach. Some other historians have pushed back, saying the research is short-sighted.
Actually, I've seen some people say we're just kind of part of a fad. Climate change is such a fad these days that this is sort of a fad that will pass.
But Manning doesn't think so. Unlike ancient times, he says, we have some control over how things play out. We can reduce carbon emissions, imagine solutions. He wonders what the Egyptians would have done with the knowledge. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
Kodiak seaweed industry is growing, mostly thanks to the investment of one company. Blue Evolution is based in the lower 48 and turns kelp into pasta products. In May, they successfully completed harvest with a local fisherman in the city of Kodiak. Now they're gearing up to plant more seaweed in Alaska waters. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has the story.
Peoples unwraps some dried kelp and drops the leaves into a tank.
We basically try and stimulate spore release by stressing out the plants. We dry them out, we put them in the dark, and that stimulates them to release their spores when they're reintroduced to seawater.
Next, she pours some fertilized water into the tank to encourage spore release. The ultimate goal is to grow the spores out enough to transfer them to one of the Blue Evolution sites, a process which Peoples says takes 6 to 8 weeks. Peoples carries the tank back to the cold room, where Blue Evolution keeps the rest of the seeded tanks. Peoples says the room is set at the optimal grow temperature for kelp, about 50 degrees in the water. Each tank is full of what looks like brownish spools of thread, which isn't far from the truth. They're pipes wrapped in seeded string, and the string is darker or lighter depending on the growth. Peoples points out the labels on the corner of each tank.
You can see that the date that's listed is the date that they were seeded, so when we put the spores into these tanks with the string wrapped around the pipes, those spores swim around for about 24 hours before they settle onto the pipes. From there, they grow into microscopic gametophytes, which will fertilize each other and grow into tiny little blades.
Peoples says some of the spores are growing better than others, although she's not sure why. The conditions are all the same, from the water to the fertilizer.
The more I learn about kelp, the more I realize we know nothing about kelp. We like to think that we know what we're doing with it and how it operates and behaves, but it always ends up surprising us.
She says Blue Evolution relies on the natural cycles of Alaska kelp and uses those plants to source the seed they use in their lab. Their pilot year was an especially warm one, and it turns out 2017 is on the chillier side in comparison.
Last year, we were in full operation in our hatchery by late August, and we are currently still producing seed. So we're going to be 2 to 3 months behind what we were last year. Whether or not that's behind schedule, we'll see.
She says the permitting process also delayed things, but the Onion Bay and Larsen Bay sites now have their paperwork in order and are ready for outplanting. She says the other two sites are in Women's Bay in Kodiak and one spot in the Ketchikan area. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by
GCI Business, with complete GCI data solutions for Alaska's most important organizations. GCI is your partner in possibilities. Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
On Tuesday night, a man in a Halloween mask walked into Bethel's VFW bingo hall, grabbed a fistful of money from the cash drawer, and ran out the door. The Bethel PD have yet to make an arrest. KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis has the story.
Before a man in a bloodied Halloween mask walked up to the register, it was a bingo night like any other. Jim Wyckoff was the caller for the evening.
It was a pretty routine night. Everybody gets their cards in, and then we go through game after game. We were just finishing up the game that leads into the final two, big money games. And in fact, we had just identified a winner.
Josie Andrews had just finished working the bingo hall's concession stand, where she sells pretzels and nachos to customers. She was standing near the register, shuffling through sheets for the next game, when a man walked in. Andrews says he was wearing a mask that was made to look like it was bloody. Quote, "The way he was walking towards me, I didn't see any harm, like a gun or a knife," she says. "The way he was looking at me, I thought it was a prank. Next thing I knew, he took the money and ran." The thief had reached into the bingo hall's cash drawer and grabbed a fistful of bills. Most of the people in the hall didn't see the crime happen, but they definitely heard it. Julie Springer was sitting at one of the tables closest to the door, playing a few games.
The only thing that I heard was a guy yelling, "Hey," with great force. And next thing, somebody went out, and then several more people went trailing right after whoever went out. I was afraid. I was scared.
Wyckoff ran after the thief with at least three other men.
And then I see him running down the street going toward the college. I ran after him, and he's younger and faster than I. So all I saw was his form running down the street from the back in the dark, in the shadows.
He says the man gave him the slip when he sprinted past the KUC campus. The Bethel Police Department was called and spent some time last night reviewing the bingo hall's security footage. This wasn't some small-time robbery. According to Wyckoff, the thief managed to grab several neatly bundled stacks of $500 bills from the bingo hall's cash drawer, a total of almost $3,000. Tuesday is the Lions Club's bingo night, and the proceeds from the night's games would have gone to them.
They run the Winter House, and it's pretty sad when they attack a charitable organization like that.
The cash drawer was open, and there wasn't any kind of barrier there that would prevent someone from reaching in and taking something. Wyckoff says that before this happened, the bingo hall didn't think it needed any extra security.
This is the first time this has happened, to my knowledge, in the 20 years I've been doing this. If they were able to do it that easily once, we need to do something to make it a lot harder in the future, because if they've done it once, they'll probably figure out I can do this again.
The hall's managers have already discussed adding additional security measures. Bethel Chief of Police Burke Waldron says that the Bethel PD's investigation is ongoing. I'm Teresa Katsourilis.
The Interior Gas Utility has scheduled a couple of public meetings this month to inform Fairbanks North Star Borough residents about the status of the IGU board's proposal to buy Pentex Alaska Natural Gas Company as part of the local utility's efforts to build a natural gas distribution system for Fairbanks and North Pole. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
IGU General Manager Jomo Stewart has scheduled two meetings before and after Thanksgiving to allay public uncertainty and concern over the IGU's proposed purchase of Pentex. The first meeting will be held November 21st at Fairbanks City Hall, the second November 28th at the North Pole Branch Library, both from 6 to 8 p.m.
This is a community project. This is a community utility. And so the feelings of the public are important.
As important, Stewart says, is the opportunity to improve the two-way exchange of information from the IGU to the public and vice versa.
More eyes, more thoughtful minds looking at these things. You can find things that you never even considered. You can check your blind spots.
The meetings were scheduled partly in response to comments by several members of the public in last week's IGU board meeting about the purchase of Pentex from the Alaska Industrial Development Authority, or ADA. The residents asked questions about the status of negotiations with ADA and terms of the sale, and they expressed concern over what they said was a lack of information from the IGU. Stewart says IGU's board members would like to address those concerns.
Certainly they want the public to be informed, and they would like to have community input.
Stewart says the time is drawing near for the board to reconcile differences with ADA over some aspects of the sale and finance agreement for the Pentex purchase. ADA has proposed to sell Pentex and its assets to the IGU for $58 million. Those assets include the Texas-based company's local firm, Fairbanks Natural Gas, as well as its Titan LNG liquefaction facility at Point McKenzie, and a fleet of tanker trucks to haul the gas to Fairbanks. Stewart says ADA wants the IGU board to make a decision on the Pentex purchase by the end of the month.
My board doesn't feel like it needs to be bound by some external entity's timeline. However, I mean, there is solid reason for moving forward expeditiously on these decisions so that you can move forward on the project.
Chief among those solid reasons, he says, is the state of Alaska's offer to help the IGU finance the purchase and the likelihood that that money won't be on the table much longer if the IGU can't come to an agreement with ADA soon. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman, Ed Schoenfeld, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes and Samantha Davenport in Anchorage, Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, and Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting.
The University of Alaska's founders knew that to build a great state, we would need a great university. Today, UA offers more than 400 degrees and certificates with campuses from Kotzebue to Ketchikan. They are leaders in Arctic and Alaska research and dedicated to direct hands-on teaching, whether online, in the classroom, or in the field. Greatness awaits you. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve at alaska.edu/start here. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska. Do you need health insurance but think you can't afford it? Alaska's health insurance premiums are going down for 2018. If you need insurance or currently have insurance through the individual market, be sure to shop at healthcare.gov between November 1st and December 15th to confirm that you have the plan that best meets your family's budget and coverage needs. For local assistance, call 1-844-PLANS-AK. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
Find out how you can include a gift to your public radio station through estate planning. Ask your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.